PRI, Public Radio International.
Black Radio, telling it like it was, is made possible by a major grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional support from the James Smithson Society and the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
From Radio Smithsonian.
Destination Freedom.
30 minutes of red hot, beat me down, bring you up, bring to today.
This is Jonathan back on the scene.
Top of the morning,
now, I know you got to have some soul, because I got to be some soul.
I have a dream today.
If we hadn't been laughing, we couldn't have gotten a point across.
Everybody get up, boogie. You're digging WROL.
Black Radio, telling it like it was. A history of radio and the African-American culture. I'm Lou Rawls. You know, some talented folks work in black radio. And while African-American men have dominated the industry, black women have been there from the beginning. And they've been having their say, contributing their skills and struggling to survive.
Take this down as a dictation. We're a true hip-hop radio station from the north to south, east to west, y'all. AJ's about to rip up the roll call. I made the switch to 106 to play the jams that you like. Now I'm flowing in the morning with the jammer.
Right, right.
Perking you up like a cup of hot coffee. The combat juice is weak. They need to back up off me.
Hi, this is AJ Parker. I'm a radio disc jockey, or ear personalities, they call them, in the 90s here in Chicago. Things really haven't changed too much within the industry now. You find women that are on the station, but you find that there are now a lot of women that anchor morning shows. They're starting to move now into the afternoon drive, but it's still a male-dominant position. Usually you'll see women on middays or overnights, or either co-host morning teams.
You're a very positive influence in young people's lives. She listens to you all. She's very inspired. And communications is something that she wants to go into in her life. And I thank you all for being there.
Thank you.
We thank you.
All right, have a blessed day.
You all right, you too.
Now. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.
Oh, that was
so
nice.
What
about?
Yeah. Oh, that was so sweet.
Just
bro.
Don't know how many lives you touch when you just open up your mouth.
Chicago's A.J. Parker is a hot, up-and-coming black radio personality, and she's following in the footsteps of one of the pioneering women in this medium, Martha Jean the Queen Steinberg. The Queen started in black radio in the 1950s.
You know, I used to say, in this business, baby, you got to think like a man, act like a lady, and work like a dog. You understand? And it hasn't changed.
For the lonely today. For the confused and frustrated today.
Martha Jean the Queen's announcing skills were developed at WDIA in Memphis, the first black radio station to devote all of its programming to a black audience. Now, in the early 60s, she moved to a station in Inkster, Michigan, a little town just outside Detroit, where she immediately connected with the Detroit black community.
I realized what Detroit needed, and I started with my blue-collar worker salute. I was going to Inkster one day, and I saw all the men in the hole on East Coast Roads. They were digging. They always working, doing something on those expressway out there. So when I got to the radio station that day, I said, to all my men in the hole on East Coast Road, the Queen is touching you today. Then the next day somebody called and said, well, you talked about the men on her. What about us over here at this plant? And so I had a blue-collar worker salute that we play on the station right today.
You're listening to a black classic on WQBH 1400 AM.
We call it Taste in Time.
We call it Taste in Time.
We salute all of our blue-collar workers.
Yeah, go on, Queen.
All of you who earn your bread by the sweat of your brow. I want to let you know today that you are somebody. You are responsible for the wheels of this world going around. And don't you ever forget it. For all of my truck driving friends and my heavy equipment operators and all of my gossiping barbers and my beauticians.
Martha Jean McQueen was one of two women in Detroit that I was even aware of as people on the air, women on the air.
DJ Candy Shannon was a Queen fan.
She was a character. She broadcast at WJLB middays, and she was a community person. She played the music, but she was plugged into what was going on in the city. And that was her style, the Queen.
Well, in Detroit, the factories would have vacation pay. And I was always talking to women. I said, and let that man come into his house. And when he walks in the door, greet him with nothing around you but a feather. And that was funny, you know, it's a new dialogue. And I said, then ask him for all his money and get it. I would tell him, go to the gate and get your money, because it's your money, for you and your children and your family. And the women would ask for that money. But you know, ironic, they were angry with me, some of those men. They were threatening to bump me off, girl.
But the Queen managed to work her way into the hearts of her female and male listeners by talking her talk and playing the hits. In fact, by playing the popular songs of the day, the Queen was almost in a league of her own. Most women on early black radio were either the host of cooking or homemaker shows, or they were gospel music announcers. And gospel music is exactly what veteran Philadelphia DJ Louise Williams played at WDAS in the early 1960s.
And so we come to the altar this morning to ask the Lord to bless you and yours, for he indeed is able to do it. Outside in the park, you're looking at 59 degrees, and we're getting ready to move into the upper room.
Hi, I'm Louise Williams, WDAS Radio. Even in the 60s, I knew that that which came from the heart reached the heart. And my determination was to not just talk at people, but to talk to people, to reach the very heart of them, to the extent that they wanted to answer me back when I spoke. And I managed that because several people would say to me, you know, when you're on the air, I talk to you. I say, go ahead, Louise, do it.
My darling, if I am not victorious in any other expression today, I do pray that I'm victorious in expressing to you how important it is that you live in light.
Gospel programming has also been a passion for Irene Johnson Ware. Ware has worked at WGOK in Mobile, Alabama for more than 30 years.
I came into radio during the time when they used the names, and nobody knew that I was the Irene Weaver Johnson at that time, because they had a name for me, Miss Mandy. I think that was the whole concept of the white owners at that time, is to use these names, and everybody who went into that format basically sound the same. And it didn't sound like they were making changes.
You never could use your own name.
Novella Smith was a popular DJ in Houston, Texas during the 60s. To her listeners, she was Dizzy Lizzy, a name she disliked and fought against. Smith believed that black announcers should be known for who they really were.
Being a maverick, and I've always been a maverick, I said, do something for yourself, Novella. Identify yourself, because you're not a Dizzy Lizzy material. So after the news, I said, this is Novella Doe Smith reporting KYOK, Instant Jet News. I always identified myself, so every 30 minutes it was Novella Doe Smith. And then after the news, I'd go into the Jive, Jam, and Gumbo show.
G-way. Look at his eyes. G-way. How they hypnotize.
Remember this song? G-Wiz was a smash hit for singer Carla Thomas in the early 1960s. It became a hit, like thousands of other black songs, because Dizzy Lizzy and other African-American DJs broke it on their radio shows.
To break a record, you play the record after the newscast. Every 30 minutes, the record gets played. And we were star makers. We were the pace setters. If we didn't play the records, they didn't get the exposure.
And by playing and pushing these great songs, black men and women DJs became almost as popular as the artists they played.
See, we were the superstars, you know, wherein now it's so many superstars. But you see, then we were bigger than any of the big stars that come to town.
Hattie Lieber, she was from Charlotte, North Carolina. She came to black radio as a teenager in the 1950s. On the air, she was known as Chatty Hattie.
I was emceeing all of the shows that came to town, but I got more rounds of applause when they said, "Showtime, hit it." And when Chatty Hattie walked out there and all my fine glad rags I used to wear when I was young, beautiful and black, honey, didn't nobody have nothing on me, because you were a legend in your own time. You were respected. Your fans loved you, worshipped you. We had people that would get in trouble with the law and would not go give themselves up at the police headquarters. They'd come to us for us to take them downtown. That's the kind of rapport we had with our listening audience.
During black radio's early days, Chatty Hattie and other African-American women DJs were adored by their listeners. And like their male counterparts, these women actually became role models to their fans. But inside the radio station, some of the men that these women worked with were not happy about their presence. Here's Chatty Hattie.
There were mixed emotions there. Me being the only female, there were some diehard men there that thought, well, you know, females should be home having babies, in the kitchen cooking. This is not an industry for females. And they tried to do little things to discourage me. Some of them, you know, they'd pull my hair. They would take my bows off, you know, because I was 16. They'd say, my God, you know, get your education, because this is no place for you.
Veteran DJ Eddie O.J.
You know, there was a time in the history of radio where a woman's voice was not declared good enough. It was said at one time that women's voices were irritating, and that was wrong. They just hadn't tried enough of them. Some bad women out here. But women played an integral role in the early part of radio, especially when they were on the air for 2 to 3 hours.
Black radio, telling it like it was, from Public Radio International.
We'd like to talk about the records we will play tonight, and also mention that we'll be around most every night. Inconsequential things that men do really care to know, like you're smack dab in the middle, 98 on your radio. So baby, stay, don't go away, please hear me say, we're talking girl talk, girl talk.
Are you familiar with Yvonne Daniels?
Former DJ Sid McCoy worked with Yvonne Daniels in the mid-60s. Daniels was a major voice on Chicago radio until her death in 1991.
She was one of the best radio talents I had ever heard. She had a warmth and a sensual quality that she possessed without any attempt to be coming on like being sexy or sensuous, you know, and a musical knowledge that was way beyond her years, you know. Well, her father was like Billy Daniels, the singer. And evidently she'd been exposed to music at an early age. So she had all of this knowledge, and she had great taste too.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet.
Next time you see a record shop
and walk on by.
No, don't walk on by.
Walk on by.
Don't walk on by. Stop. Look, this thing has been spreading like hot butter from Detroit to Chicago to Philly, and by the time it gets to Phoenix, there just won't be any left.
By the time.
Ah, that voice. Yvonne Daniels proved that women's voices were acceptable on radio. Meanwhile, women like Alma John became the moral voice of her station, encouraging listeners to become more active in their communities. At WWRL in New York City, John was the voice of the black community during the 60s and 70s. After her retirement, John returned to WWRL, and she talked with DJ Rocky Bridges. Now, this was in 1984.
You know, you always had that saying, if you don't know, teach, and if you don't know, learn.
And give then each thing. One, reach one, and each one, teach one. It works like a miracle.
I tell you.
It really does.
She came on three times a day, little vignettes. Hi, this is Alma Vessels John. She would do a little thing, but she was a darling. She was my mother in radio. That's what I tell everybody.
In the mid-60s, Dorothy Bronson was the first and only African-American woman to work in management at WWRL. There were barely any other women in black radio management in the nation.
There were a lot of things that I had to do that I was not pleased with, though I was very shrewd in how I did them, and so I could always live with myself. But still, the frustration level, the pressure level, and so I'd go to Alma and cry at night and all that stuff.
It was rough for Bronson, working with an all-white and male station management. She fought for pay equity for the station's popular black jocks, men who were paid less than half of what their white counterparts made. And as a black woman with strong accounting and management skills, she battled for respect. But Bronson became so successful that in the early 1970s, she was hired to manage competing black station WLIB-AM and its struggling sister station WBLS-FM.
I'm famous for having done some very classic promotions. We did a thing on Reese Beach for WBLS. We brought out people in top coats and everything and put them in limousines and took them to Reese Beach. Well, in that time, every black person in America went to Reese Beach. Now, if you had your radio on the BLS and we walked up to you and your radio was on, you could instantly win. We were 107.5. Well, you could win instantly either $1,750, $107.50, and when it went on. And on any given Sunday, we could give away $5,000 or $10,000. And man, every Sunday on Reese Beach, the entire beach would have their radio on.
Under Bronson's leadership, WBLS developed into a popular moneymaker. Her innovative program director at that time created the WBLS sound. Boy, Frankie Crocker took some chances, and one of the many he did really paid off. Crocker hired an African-American woman with little radio experience. She became his midday announcer, and let me tell you, she became a major personality on FM radio. Her name? Vi Higginson.
Vi Higginson, WBLS.
And a very pleasant good afternoon. Hello. The sun is at its highest point in the sky. It is the most powerful point in the afternoon, and one might wonder why I celebrate the sun. You see, the sun is the center of the universe.
I really enjoyed those early days, and the format was a total black experience and sound. And you could never get bored listening to different varieties of sounds and rhythms and beats and emotions and moods, and we would clearly set the pace and the mood for the day. And I took going into people's homes very seriously because the power of radio, I thought, was so great. I mean, how does sitting in this room allow me to come into your bathroom and your bedroom and your living room? And it was astonishing, you know. And I wanted to perhaps do or say something that might make a difference in somebody's life if they chose to turn the radio on that day.
Today, well, it's a kind of special day, and to all the men who share my life every day from noon until 4 o'clock, I'd like to say to you, Happy Valentine's Day, baby. Happy Valentine's Day. And to all the beautiful ladies, I'd like to say to you, too, Happy Valentine's Day.
I'm Frankie Crocker, DJ, program director for WBLS. And women's voices are sexy no matter what happens. See, and I went for voices. The ladies that I picked were intelligent ladies. They were intelligent and aware about what they were doing. I found people who could communicate. Vi could communicate. It's also a theater of the mind, so I need somebody that has an imagination, that imagined they were somebody or who was living that way and could bring that to radio.
93KYS Kashif, I just got to have you. I can see it in your eyes. That was Angela Bofield from her Too Tough LP. Mr. Magic, Grover Washington Jr. began the 7 o'clock hour. 7:18. I'm Candy, and we're together from now until...
In Washington, D.C., another program director wanted a woman to be the voice of his struggling black FM station. Now, this was the mid-1970s. The station was WKYS, or KISS as it was known. And the program director was Donnie Simpson. And the woman he hired was former Detroit DJ Candy Shannon.
When Donnie hired me and talked to me about it, once I accepted, then he unrolled the plan. And he felt he wanted Miss Kiss on the radio station and that my voice was the Miss Kiss he was looking for. So I was working 7 to midnight, Monday through Friday. And I realize now, looking back, that whatever I was able to carve out was wonderful because the most listened to radio show in the nation's capital was on at the same time. I was going up against The Quiet Storm with Melvin Lindsay.
The music of Patti LaBelle on WHUR, the title tune to her latest album, I'm in Love Again. And before that, it's Patti LaBelle with Since I Don't Have You. 2 minutes before 8 p.m., you're listening to The Quiet Storm.
Soft and warm, a quiet storm, quiet as when flowers talk at break of dawn, break of dawn.
The Quiet Storm. It's a smoking blend of mellow, relaxing, and often romantic tunes. It's a programming format that was developed by Kathy Hughes. Now, at the time, Hughes was the general manager of Howard University's commercial station, WHUR-FM. She developed the Quiet Storm concept after attending a class of broadcast programming at the University of Chicago.
I arrived back from school on a Friday, and so I'm literally running around my apartment. My doorbell keeps ringing. It's all my friends. Oh, how was it? How was it? You know, how's Chicago? And they're coming over to hang out. One had some crabs, another had some beer. And I'm like, excuse me, I have a date. And they're like, well, we don't have nothing. Don't worry about it. I have just learned something that's going to change your life. I am going to create a radio program that even if you don't have a date on a Friday night, you're not going to mind. You're going to be content to stay home by yourself. Now, the program didn't have a name at that time. It became The Quiet Storm.
The music of Marvin Gaye, along with Tammy Terrell, the year 1967. 7:24 in Washington. Once again, good evening. I'm Melvin Lindsay, and welcome to The Quiet Storm. And since we've opened up this evening, we've been featuring the music from Marvin Gaye. And certainly all condolences from WHUR go out to the family and friends of Marvin Gaye here in the Washington area.
When I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing.
Even today, 20 years later, hundreds of black radio stations use the Quiet Storm format. Man, what a tribute to its creator. But while Kathy Hughes is happy with its success, she is dismayed by the sexism that exists in black radio.
It's fascinating to me that women in this industry still do not get the credit that they deserve. My lack of recognition as the creator of The Quiet Storm is a classic case of sexism in the industry, because even the brothers who know, many of whom work side by side with me at Howard University, won't part their lips to say a woman created that show. That was her concept. That bothers me very much, because women have made some incredible contributions in broadcasting, but our industry is still very much the old boy network. And the only thing that has changed is some of those old boys have melanin and look like me now.
I don't want anybody judging me by gender. I really don't like anybody judging me by color, but it's not much I can do about that.
Dorothy Brunson became the first African-American woman in the country to own and operate her own radio station. Brunson brought Baltimore's WEBB in 1979 and owned two more stations by 1984.
You cannot and should not perceive I don't have any intellect because I'm a woman. And even though you're the boss, you're still part of the bed syndrome. And I mean, at one time I did probably weigh 135, 40 pounds and probably did look attractive to somebody. But my point is that was always sex thing. I mean, get away from it. I'm interested in building a business and I'm trying to do a $2 million deal and somebody's coming and want to pat you on your fanny and that kind of stuff. Or either talk to you condescendingly.
New York Air personality Pat Prescott.
Women are good managers. I don't know, maybe it comes from the fact that we've always run the household and tried to pull all the ends together and, you know, make a nickel out of a penny and that we've gotten good at that. But I think that women are very good managers. I'm sure not all women are, but I think that a lot of women have very unique abilities that make them good managers. And I think that women are proving that all over the industry.
Having a hard time finding a radio station that fits your taste? Well, we've got it.
We are WVON, the talk of Chicago. We're a radio station whose time has come. The black community of Chicago cries out for some serious radio, and we've got it.
I'm Melody Spann. I'm the president and general manager of radio station WVON. It's hard managing a radio station. You know, this industry has been very male-dominated. And to survive in it, you have really got to prove yourself that you are confident in what you're doing and that you don't allow anyone to shake that confidence. And I think that I've started to earn the respect of my peers because around here, we're family, you know, and I let people know that we're family. I will be nice as long as people allow me to. But you really do have to stand up because I think we've lived in a male-dominated society for so long that they don't expect us to have the strength and the ability that we truly have. And you do have to flex your muscle for respect.
Martha Jean the Queen.
Look, I'm here. Women are here. We want an active part.
It's said that if you own, you control. That's a powerful message, especially as black-owned radio struggles to survive today.
I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself.
I'm Kathy Hughes, owner and CEO of Radio One Incorporated that owns and operates 8 radio stations. God bless the child that's got their own, the ability to interpret who you are and what's important to you from your own perspective. It is the difference between life and death for our community. It's the difference between slavery and liberation, whether or not we can control our own means of communications.
I don't want nobody. Give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself.
Current black radio owners like Kathy Hughes and past owners like James Brown are part of a more than 40-year struggle. The first step toward black radio ownership was taken when the late Jesse Bladen bought a financially troubled station in Atlanta, Georgia.
And the station's call letters were WERD.
Here's veteran DJ Jack Gibson.
And we opened October the 4th, 1949. I know because I flipped the switch and said,
"Good morning, Atlanta. We're here.
We're here, and we ain't going nowhere." And that was how we started.
The Atlanta of that time was really segregated. Segregation and racial prejudice limited opportunities for blacks. But segregation also forced African Americans to develop and maintain their own communities and their own businesses. Now, some blacks did extremely well. Take, for instance, Jesse Bladen. He was a highly successful certified public accountant, and he believed in taking risks. So Bladen bought WERD. Even though few businesses at that time seemed more risky than owning and operating a radio station with a wide range of black programming.
You heard such programs as Bouncing with Bobby, Morning Meditations, Ray McIver.
Former WERD program director, Ken Knight.
And then we had Sweet Chariot, yours truly. Followed by Lunch Call with the zaniest team in radio, Herb Gershon and Jack Gibson.
Well, it's 12 noon and it's time for Lunch Call.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Lunch Call Show.
It's radio's maddest 60 minutes of music and merriment.
And with recorded music, it comes your way each and every day from noon till one.
So come on in and have some fun.
With those maniacs, Herb and Jack.
Who are inviting you to...
And then there was Johnny Martin, who followed with Gospel Train. Dave Bondu with another very fine program. Later, his wife, the only Mr. and Mrs. Sepia in Negro radio or in America.
This was the first black-owned station in the United States. And it was a station that was, I can always remember, it was 860 on the dial. And it was only 1,000 watt, but we covered Atlanta, and that was what was intended to do.
Hey, Jack Gibson.
TV was coming up then. So all the advertising dollars were going to TV, so the little stations were catching double. So this station was up for sale on the courthouse steps in Atlanta. And again, the family that bought it, the father was the first black CPA in the Deep South. He understood the media and how he could spread his business, CPA, but also to help other black businesses that were in Atlanta. And for those who don't know, Atlanta was considered to be the mecca of all black businesses in the United States. So to get a station in Atlanta, Georgia was fantastic.
Slowly but surely, Bladen's staff wooed white and black advertisers and captured listeners. WERD was the black radio station in Atlanta, surviving for years as a popular and financially solvent station. Bladen's success inspired later generations of black radio owners.
I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, under segregated circumstances. And between the years of 8 and 12, I used to walk around with a corn cob to my mouth saying, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Percy Sutton from high in the clouds of the Smith-Young Tower in San Antonio, Texas. I wanted to be a radio announcer. But I couldn't go into that radio station, I should tell you, in Smith-Young Tower, because blacks couldn't go in that radio station."
Percy Sutton soon set higher goals for himself.
I wanted the ownership side. I wanted to own one because I said, if I own a radio station, I can talk on that radio station. And I'll talk about all these discriminatory things. I'd talk about the injustices that I see around me.
Let's welcome our guest this morning to the Global Black Experience. Brian, good morning and welcome.
Thank you and good morning.
Good to have you with us. Let's first of all talk about the GOP reversal on the student aid plan. And your comments.
This is WLIB AM in New York. WLIB and WBLS FM are the flagship stations of inner city broadcasting, the media company developed by Percy Sutton. In 1982, WLIB became a largely black talk radio station. Program director Mark Riley.
It was based on a feeling that people really didn't have a voice, didn't have a way to express some of the situations that were taking place in the community at the time. This was 2 years into Reaganomics. And people really were frustrated and didn't have a place to vent. Now, historically, the same corner where LIB used to be located, right at the Teresa Hotel, used to be the place where people would come and vent. You know, folks would come out and they'd right at 125th and 7th. They'd have a flatbed truck and people like Charles Kenyatta, going back to Malcolm X, used to stand there and, you know, talk to the crowd. And I think initially people looked at WLIB in its talk mode as being kind of an amplification of that.
In the early 1960s, WLIB was like most radio stations that played black music. They were owned by whites. At that time, Percy Sutton was a respected lawyer, politician, and activist. Often, he appeared on WLIB's airwaves. He knew the station owner, Harry Novick, and often talked with him.
So he said, "You know, I'm going to get rid of this station." I said, "Well, Mr. Novick, would you let me buy it?" I didn't have any money to buy it. And he said, "Yes." And we shook hands. No money passed. That was 1964. In 1965, he said, "I'm ready to sell it." It took me from 1965 until 1972 to get a bank or lending institution to lend me the money. All I needed was $2.5 million to buy both WLIB AM and FM.
12B, New York's only black-controlled radio station. 12B Radio, New York's new black explosion.
the FM station became WBLS and became the number one radio station in America, not the number one colored, not the number one black, not the number one Negro, but the number one radio of all radio stations as rated by Arbitron, which is an official rating agency relied upon by advertisers and others to determine the listening audience.
WBLS goes out for Bubbles LaRue and crew. There's no me without you.
Baby, you are my life.
Why was it so hard for Percy Sutton then? And why today is it so hard for African-American station buyers to find funding? Here's Percy Sutton.
If I tell you it's racism, people will say, look, he's too sensitive. But if you have a if you have a business plan that's prepared by someone who has used that business plan to buy other radio stations for white people, and you use it, you don't get, you can't borrow the money, and you're not asking for half of what they were asking for. I don't know whether you call it racism or not, but you, the nice way to say it is you become sensitive. When you look in the mirror in the morning, you say, no, something is wrong with this face that I have. The color, maybe that's it because it's happened to me before.
African-American owners will tell you that they had to fight to get access to desirable stations and markets.
I'm Purvis Spann. I'm known professionally as the Blues Man, and I work and own radio station WVON, 1450 AM. I'm the only black-owned and operated radio station in Chicago. The airways were cobbled up, just like they cobbled the land up. So many acres on this plantation, so many, and the airways are cobbled up basically the same way. All the radio frequencies and TV frequencies were given out. Then when they were sure that they were all gone, then they said, okay, you black folks, y'all can have some radio station. So you have to go and try to do like we did this one. You know, where something open, we run in and try to get it. But there's no sure thing that you're going to get in the first place. Matter of fact, the odds are very much against you that you're going to get it.
Isn't that pretty? I'm going crazy over you. I'm going crazy over you. WVON. Let's get to the telephone now.
By the mid-1970s, barely 40 African-Americans owned radio stations. Black lobbying organizations pressured the Broadcast Regulatory Board, the FCC, to do something about such inequality. It was a struggle, but by the late 1970s, the FCC established policies to beef up minority ownership. And one of the first was a distressed sale policy. And according to National Black Media Coalition head Pluria Marshall, the FCC's distressed sale policy really worked.
If a white broadcaster was in trouble with the FCC rules and was going to lose his license, the distressed sale policy stated that if you sell to a minority purchaser for 75% of assessed value, then we will let you sell to that minority person rather than lose your license. So that generated about 45 radio and television stations to be sold to minorities that never would have been considered for sale.
One of the FCC's first distressed sales was WOL in Washington, D.C.
And now, from Washington, more music on
1450 WOL. Sonny Jim Kelsey.
Gotta get away from you.
Come on now.
Fast as I can.
In the 60s, WOL was hot. It was owned by the successful Sonderling broadcast chain, and it was the top black station in D.C. But the station got into serious hot water with the FCC in the 70s when several DJs were accused of payola, of taking bribes. It was downhill from there. Sonderling used a distressed sale policy to sell WOL to Kathy and Dewey Hughes. The couple walked into the station in 1980, starting the country's first black talk format.
6:15, that's news from WL Jim Allen reporting. Stay tuned as the Kathy Hughes Morning Show continues.
All right, recap once again quickly, Mark Lane, before we go back to the phone lines for folks who overslept and someone just jarred them awake telling them that the sky is falling, Chicken Little.
Yeah, well, it is. And now it's been falling for a long time. The Memphis Commercial Appeal has just published a front page story which shows that the United States Army, through its intelligence operations, has been spying on blacks in the United States for 75 years. But to me, the most important part is the fact that they were deeply involved apparently in all aspects surrounding the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King.
By the time Kathy Hughes' station went on the air in 1980, there were about 140 black-owned stations. Just 4 years earlier, less than 40 African-Americans were owners. What caused this boom? The distressed sale policy, along with the FCC's tax certificate policy.
What that policy did was, for the first time, it encouraged sellers to seek out minority buyers. Up until there was a tax certificate policy, station trading occurred in an old boy network.
James Winston is a lawyer and the director of the National Association of Black-Owned Broadcasters.
What the tax certificate did was opened up that old boy network so that sellers looking to gain a tax break would seek out minority buyers. We gained access. For the first time, people were calling us with desirable stations for sale.
That takes you back, doesn't it? Friends of Distinction at 980 AAA on the Thursday morning throwback and going in circles.
Black radio telling it like it was from Public Radio International.
I'm Uter Evans, president and general manager of WAAA Radio 980 AAA in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. As an AM station in a mid-sized market with classy FM stations, so serious competitors, we continue to hold our own because we do some things that they don't do. And I think when we do them in a way in which people know that we're genuine and that we care, it's not for show. When other stations a few years ago got into the thing of, oh, we're not playing any more violent rap and any rap that is demeaning to women, we didn't have to go there because I never allowed it in the beginning. So to me, all of that's about a consciousness.
Black-owned radio may also encourage activism. In the mid-80s, Kathy Hughes used her airwaves to respond to black community anger with the Washington Post. Black D.C. readers were thrilled when the Post announced that an African-American was going to be featured on the cover of their newly designed Sunday magazine.
John Thompson and the Georgetown Hoyas were hotter than a firecracker then, so we were speculating because everyone loves John Thompson. We speculated Colin Powell. And what we were doing is pushing the magazine. We're on the air. Get the magazine. Magazine coming out Sunday. Gonna be a black person on the cover. Yeah, all right. Washington Post finally got it together. Yay for the Washington Post. Well, boom. The Sunday arrived. And Lord have mercy. All these incredible, glorious stories of black manhood in Washington, D.C. that could be told, and the story that the Washington Post decides to tell with their $5 million baby is about some thug in New York who is accused of killing a Howard student.
All right, y'all, this Sunday and every Sunday at 4 o'clock, we're going to take this sucker back.
Take it back.
W.P. Mag. Post magazine. We're gonna take this trash right back to you. Hope you know what you're trying to do.
This Post magazine issue also ignored positive black images and advertisement in a city known for its black majority population. So for 4 months, Hughes and her WOL family of listeners took the magazines and dumped them right back on the Washington Post steps.
We had one family member, Milt Matthews, he wrote a song, Take It Back. We don't want to take it back. We mobilized. We had community meetings. We talked about content analysis. And it was an incredibly successful campaign. We returned close to 500,000 copies of the magazine to them. It was not a boycott. It was a recall, just like with your car. When you got a defective vehicle, you've made a defective purchase, you take it back.
Black-owned radio is often the voice of the community. This is definitely the case at KJLH-FM in Los Angeles. Now, this station is owned by Stevie Wonder.
My pleasure to remind you that you are in tune to the creative source for sound in the Southland. KJLH. Getting by in the colors of green and gold.
When Steve first heard KJLH, it was kind of jazz fusion, kind of militant, kind of, you know, it was almost a hodgepodge of everything black. All things good about our music and our talk and our conversation. It was almost like an eclectic blend, but it was very successful. So, of course, Steve, being the artist that he is, it tapped into his creative sense, and he wanted to own it. He loved it. He loved KJLH, and everywhere he went in the world, he would talk about this radio station.
KJLH general manager Karen Slade.
So he bought it, and the only difference was he began to do things even more for the community. I think one of the first things he did was Survival for the 80s, which was his first major campaign, and went out to the community and paid electric bills and utility bills, all that kind of stuff for the community. And it evolved into a public service campaign entitled We Are You. And we still hold that true for all of our talk shows and public affairs shows. So if you feel it, if it affects you, it affects us. And that's our bond with the community.
I would just like to vent my frustration and outrage. And my question is this. How can you communicate with a people, I'm speaking of white Americans, who simply seem to be apathetic and have no sense of empathy for the black plight, but that all they see is stores and being looted, and they can't understand how people are so enraged? I'm not justifying looting, but what I am saying is that they don't understand why we're so angry. There's still areas of Los Angeles that if we go into, we get harassed.
In 1992, Los Angeles erupted into mass violence after four city police officers were acquitted for beating black motorist Rodney King. Now, KJLH is primarily a music station, but after that verdict, it immediately became the black community's voice.
Like I said last night, we're dealing with attitudes, and the attitude we're dealing with is a racist attitude, and it's terrible.
I think that we shouldn't be tearing up our own community. That's ridiculous. This is our community. This is where we live. I can't even go to school to better myself because we are doing this. I can't go to school to get my education. We're ruining our own community. That's not helping nothing.
Can we all get along? We all can get along. We just gotta, you know, I mean, we're all stuck here for a while. Let's try to work it out.
For almost 5 days, KJLH listeners, social workers, and community leaders talked about the riot's physical, emotional, and economic fallout. No other black stations responded as strongly to the community's need to talk and to listen than KJLH. But the ability of black-owned media to continue to serve as employers, trainers, and even as educators has been dealt a serious blow. The FCC recently adopted the so-called duopoly rules. And according to attorney and black media lobbyist James Winston,
for many years, the FCC required that you could only own one AM and one FM radio station in any given radio market. The FCC has now changed its rules to allow people to own two AMs and two FMs in most markets. So that if I'm standing alone with an AM station in a market, the competitor down the street who used to have an AM/FM station that I was competing against may now have four stations owned by the same company. That means they will be selling them as a package. They can give advertisers a reduced package rate, and the business is all about advertising. And if you can't compete because you can't deliver the audience for the price that another station can, then you're going to get squeezed out of the business because the advertisers are going to stop coming to you.
Simply put, duopoly in the allowing of multiple station ownerships in the same market pit the big guys against the little guys. In the world of broadcasting, all African American broadcasters are the little guys.
Owner Kathy Hughes.
So it's the big fish gobbling up the little fish. And over the last few years, the numbers of black owners has been declining. The number of stations that we own has been declining. And so now you have the passage of duopoly. That forces you to either grow and expand. Either you have to buy or you have to sell.
This is the WOL News Talk Network. 1450 AM WOL Washington. 1010 AM WOLB Baltimore.
WMMJ Bethesda, Washington. Magic 102.3.
We're almost there, people. We're almost there. It's just about 5 o'clock at WKYS Washington, 93.9, the all-new KISS FM. And it's time for the True School Traffic Jam with my main man, DJ Iron, on KISS FM.
Kathy Hughes was the first black radio owner to embrace duopolies. Hughes now owns 3 stations in Washington, D.C., 4 in Baltimore, Maryland, and 1 in Atlanta, Georgia. But few potential black owners may be able to follow in her footsteps. Remember that tax certificate policy? Well, in 1995, Congress killed it. And in the opinion of National Black Media Coalition head Pluria Marshall,
it was just pure unadulterated racism. And along with the elimination of the ownership caps on radio and television, you will probably see the demise of minority ownership in the media period, I'd say within the next 10 years, unless somebody is man or woman enough to step up and say this is wrong and we're not going to allow it.
So now we see the light. What you gonna we're going to stand up for a yeah, ride. Yeah, so yeah. You better get up.
So what does the future hold for African-American-owned radio? Here's Kathy Hughes.
I'm so terrified of going into the year 2000 in so many arenas. When you look at the political arena, we had a larger black caucus at the turn of the last century than we have presently. And by the year 1900, they were history, and we had to start all over again. I see the same thing in broadcasting. We got a little momentum going, and then legislation was passed that we were not paying close enough attention to. We were not large enough to survive it, because certainly I'm going to try and strive with every ounce of my existence. I'm going to have focused on staying alive, but it's not written that a corporation that only has 8 stations can survive with unlimited ownership regulation. So I'm very, very fearful for the future.
Media consultant firm owner Barry Mayo.
So we've got to get real serious. If there's any light at the end of the tunnel for those who are in black radio, what it means is what it's always meant for us. You know, when we were coming up, our mothers and fathers always told us, you know, you have to work real hard and you have to be better, 2 or 3 times better than your white counterparts to just make it. That holds true in business also. So if the WBLSs of the world are going to make it, they are going to have to be better at whatever they're doing. And this is a very serious times because we're talking about the survival of black radio.
You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together.
Black Radio, telling it like it was produced by Radio Smithsonian. Jackie Gales Webb, producer. Sonia Williams and Lex Gillespie, associate producers. John Tyler, production manager. John Paulson and Matthew Sacchini, post-production engineers. And Wesley Horner, executive producer. Research by Universal Media and original music by David Ilva Sacker. I'm Lou Long.
Write Black Radio, Radio Smithsonian, MRC 645, Washington, D.C. 20560. Our internet address on the World Wide Web is www.pri.org. For further study, contact the Archives of African American Music and Culture at Indiana University, Bloomington. Black Radio, telling it like it was, is made possible by a major grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional support from the James Smithson Society and the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Special thanks to Sonic Solutions.
PRI, Public Radio.
International.
Today's programming is supported by financial contributions from Minnesota Public Radio listeners. Well, that does it for our midday program today. Gary Eichten here. Thanks for joining us. We'll be rebroadcasting this special documentary on the history of black radio at 9 o'clock tonight on the FM news station, so you get a second chance to hear it. And next week we will conclude our series. Tomorrow we're going to turn our attention to the airport, whether it should be moved to Dakota County or stay where it is. Our phone lines will be open. Hope you can join us. That's tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in today.
I'm Robert McNeil. Now that I'm no longer on the news hour, I'm going to have a lot more time in the afternoons to listen to All Things Considered.
Afternoons at 3 on the FM news station, KNOW FM 91.1.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We have a cloudy sky, 43 degrees at the FM news station, KNOW FM 91.1, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Our Twin City weather forecast, partly cloudy and windy through the afternoon, with a high approaching 50 degrees. Tomorrow's high will be in the low 50s. It's 1 o'clock.